So we have a few subject matters to speak on. So I'll just mention, today is, on the calendar, mentions today is Lord Balaram's Rasa Yatra. Being away from Sri Vrindavan Dham for many, many years, along with Krishna and Dwarka, Balaram decided to return to Sri Vrindavan Dham. And it was this time of the year, the month of Chaitra. This is Chaitra. It's a very auspicious month. It's a time of the year when many wonderful ceremonies are performed. Of course, Sri Ram appeared, Hanuman, many other personalities. And Balaram is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Brajendra Nandana Ye, Sachi Sutta Hoilo Se, Balaram Hoilo Nitai. Balaram and Krishna have again reappeared as Gornithai, both of them, the absolute truth. The difference between Balaram and Krishna, there's actually no difference, but sometimes we make a distinction for the sake of understanding that there is two personalities, and that is that Balaram's color is white, and Krishna's color is blackish. And it's not the white that we know in this world or the black we know in this world. These are all transcendental colors. So we give it this term blackish and whitish because it resembles, but it's transcendental. Sometimes Krishna's color is compared to the beautiful, this blue sky, but behind, in front of the blue sky there's a rain cloud. A rain cloud is black. Blackish. So through the cloud, the blue is slightly coming through. So that's, using that analogy, we get a little understanding of the color of Krishna. But it's only, a small attempt to help us understand. But no one can really imagine what is Krishna's color. It's not nothing of this world. And of course, Balaram, his color is like a white spring cloud. So sometimes you see these big, billowing, beautiful white clouds covering the sky, and they look like something you would just like to sleep on. So very beautiful just to look at. And they're billowing. The word billowing is like they're just piled up on each other in such a way that extracts the mind. So that whitishness of those clouds are practically as white as you can get. So sometimes that analogy is used to describe the color of Lord Balaram. So as Krishna has his associates in Vrindavan, so does Balaram have his associates. So this Balaram Rasa Yatra, is when Balaram returns to Vrindavan. And as Krishna has his own gopis, Balaram has his own gopis also. So during the 2 months, it says that Balaram stayed in Vrindavan for 2 months, and he performed Rasa Leela with his set of gopis. They're younger gopis than Krishna's gopis. And during that time, Balaram, he performed many wonderful pastimes for his own transcendental pleasure and for the pleasure of his devotees. When the Lord does something, it's for his pleasure. He doesn't always do something selflessly, because he does act selflessly, but when he gives pleasure to himself by performing his activities, everyone enjoys also. So he takes everyone into his own pleasure mood. So when he comes to Vrindavan, he dances the Rasa Leela with his gopis, and he performs many pastimes. He likes a particular beverage. I mean, we like maybe 7-Up or what else? Kiani or different kinds of beverages they have on the market that are really tasty and bubbly. Everyone has their taste. One day, devotees decided to give Srila Prabhupada a donut. And the donut had glaze on it. So Prabhupada took the donut and he was licking the glaze. And didn't eat the donut. And he could see that the devotees were curious. And Prabhupada said, everyone has their taste. So it's true. Everyone has a taste, and that's natural, normal. And so Balaram, he likes this beverage called Varuni, and it's a honey wine. It's a honey liquor, actually. It comes from the sap of trees, certain trees, and it's an intoxicant. Now, how can the Supreme Personality of Godhead become intoxicated? He does. So he drinks this honey liquor, and then he starts to chastise Indra. Because when he looks up at the moon is not the way it looks because he's intoxicated. And the moon looks like it's elongated. So he chastises Indra for not making the moon proper. And he calls him, you plaything of Sachi. That's the term he uses. Sachi is his wife, Indra's wife. So he says, you plaything of Sachi. And he starts, you know, chastising Indra. So this is his pastimes. Of course, Indra likes that. And now he wants to go swimming with his gopis in the Jamuna. So he calls Jamuna to come. But Jamuna sees that this person's really intoxicated. I don't know if I actually trust him. So she doesn't come. And Balaram becomes angry. He has that feature. His anger is transcendental. It's not. It's an anger in order to display his mood of his pastimes and to give pleasure to others. So she's not obeying his instructions, so Balaram takes out. He has two weapons, or not weapons, but two, what we say, symbols. One's a weapon, and that's his club. And the other one is a plow. Now, if you see Balaram, you'll see that in one of the, on his one hand, there's a club, and the other hand is a plow. Now, if you see different forms of Balaram, different deities of Balaram, sometimes you see the reverse. So I remember I was in Chicago Temple, and I was looking at the Balaram deity there, and I had been in New Vrindavan for many years, and I also worshiped Balaram there. I was dressing Balaram. And in New Vrindavan, he's got his plow on his right hand and his club on his left hand. But in Chicago, his club's on his right hand, his plow's on his left hand. So I just had to ask the question, well, which one's right? Or which one, well, why the difference? So I asked the temple president, one of my god brothers, who was running, he was the temple president at the time, Kalki Prabhu. And I said, Kalki, can you explain, you know, I can't understand why Balaram has his plow club on the right hand and his, and then on the other, in New Vrindavan. He said, well, that's easy to understand. When he's in New Vrindavan, it's an agriculture place, so he has to plow the ground. And in Chicago, there's so many demons, so so he has his club on his right hand. So I accepted that as Shastra. Niti Shastra, but it sounded completely right to me, so... So yeah, this is Balaram. One of his plow is called Haladar. Hala. And Dara means holder. He's Hala. And Sunanda is his club. So he has, they had their personalities to assist him in his pastimes. So when Jamuna didn't come, he took out his plow and starts scratching the ground and actually bifurcating the river Jamuna. And to this day, it's that bifurcation is still understandable because there's, Jamuna has a lot of streams. When she realized that this personality was not ordinary, she came to her senses, as it's described, and she ran and offered her obeisance. She appeared out of her waters and offered her obeisances to Balaram. and prayed for his forgiveness and his mercy. And he slowly forgave her and said, now you prepare your waters because I want to have my pastimes with my gopis. And so she made everything nice for Balaram. So during those 2 months that Balaram was in Vrindavan, he performed Rasa Leela every day with his gopis and sported in the Jamuna River like that. So you have something to look forward to when you get out of this material world. You can join the spiritual realm and associate with these personalities and perform these transcendental pastimes. This is the goal. This is the actual goal of Krishna consciousness, is to go back to Sri Vrindavan Dham and to associate with the Lord in his transcendental pastimes, which are unlimited and always full of variety and always full of unlimited happiness. This is the goal. And this is the process of bhakti brings us to that goal. So when we hear these wonderful pastimes, the Lord performing his activities with his devotees, our hearts become attracted and our minds become, what we say, diverted away from trying to fulfill material desires. We become attracted to hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord. So that's a little bit. There's a whole chapter in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the 10th canto, describing the pastimes of Lord Balaram and when he came to Vrindavan in this particular pastime, in the month of Kshetra. So today is also Shyamananda, Shyamananda Pandit. It's his, we said appearance day, is it? Appearance? It's appearance, huh? So Shyamananda, Srinivasacharya, and Narottam Das Thakur were inseparable. They were very close. They appeared, all their activities are after the departure of Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And they were in Vrindavan, and Jiva Goswami gathered these three personalities and asked them to take all the books of the Goswamis, Ujjwala Nilamani, Rupa Goswami, Bhaktivinoda Sindhu, Sanatana Goswami, Hari Bhakti Vilas, what else was there? Chaitanya Charitamrita Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami. There was only one copy of all the major scriptures at that time. And they were to take this box filled with these different powerful Vedic scriptures that had been written by the Goswamis and have them, taking them to Navadvip and have them copied. So there would be more copies. So they arranged a traveling party with these three personalities to head it up. And the main person was Srinivasacharya. He was the leader of the group. Shyamananda was there, and Narottam also was there. And they put everything in a big box, and they put it on a big cart, and they had 11 guards, not wanting to lose this great treasure. So they were going from place to place, and the guards every night would stay awake, guarding this treasure. Only one copy. When they pack the box, they put the Chaitanya Charitamrita on the bottom. And all the other books were after that. Something like that. I didn't only mention a few of them, but there were many of the writings of the Goswamis. As they were traveling, they came near to this one place called Vishnu Vana Vishnupur. And there was one king, his name was Birhambir. And he was a dacoit, like today's kings. Cut that out of the recording. So he was a dacoit, and what he would do, he had a whole set of astrologers. And he would have, his astrologers would tell him when anyone, there was any travelers coming through his kingdom, he would sent out his men to attack them, sometimes kill them, and rob them. Adibo. This was Birhan Bir. And so the news came from the astrologers, yes, there is a large group of sadhus, they're traveling, and they have this big box, and it's full of treasure. He said, okay, you go. But he gave an instructions, what he never did before. He said, don't hurt anybody, but get that box. So one night when they were traveling, it just so happens that when everyone went to sleep, all the guards fell asleep. And no one was guarding the box of books. So the men of Birhan Bir came, easily took the box away, no problem. They woke up the next morning, and then Srinivasacharya, Naratam, and Shyamananda, oh, they were besides themselves in anxiety. The only copy of the Goswami's books, and they're gone. Everyone was scrambling, thinking what to do. Finally, Srinivasacharya heard a voice from the sky. The king has stolen the books. And so at that point, he decided to break up the party. So he sent Naratam Das Thakur to Ketarigram. And he sent Shyamananda to, what is that place? Utkala, which is part of Orissa now. And he said, you go preach there. I'm going to find these books. So he made a point to go to the kingdom or the palace of this king. And he came. And the king had this court pundits every day. And they would read Srimad Bhagavatam. Even though he was a dacoit, he was reading. He would have his pundits read Srimad Bhagavatam. And his court pundits would give their commentaries on the Bhagavatam. If I'm putting anyone to sleep, that's because I'm more tired than you are. So, sorry. Yesterday was a long day. I'm sorry if I'm putting you to sleep. And I'm trying to remember all these pastimes because I didn't prepare for this whole class. So it's just this coming from what I can remember. And he was sitting there listening to the court pundits give their commentaries on the Srimad Bhagavatam, and he was making faces. And the king could notice this person who had just come. He was sitting among the pundits, and he was not very happy with what they were saying. So the king said, oh, okay, you know better. Let me hear your explanation. And he started to give his commentary on the verses that the pundits were saying on Srimad Bhagavatam. He astounded everybody. Everybody was astounded. The king was amazed. He said, you are my new head pundit. You stay here. I'll take care of you, whatever you need. In fact, you can ask anything from me. I'm prepared to give. He said, I do have one request. We were traveling with our group, and we had this box full of books, and someone stole it. He didn't want to accuse the king, although he knew. The king said, oh, I have the book. I have the box. Come. So he came, and there was the box with all the books. But the most amazing thing, after seeing the books, the Chaitanya Charitamrita, which had been put on the bottom, was now on the top. How did that happen? So those who give commentary on this story say that the Chaitanya Charitamrita is the cream of all Vedic literature. So when something is, when you settle milk and leave it, what does the cream do? Rises to the top. So Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita is a cream of all Vedic literatures. That's why Srila Prabhupada denoted that for our society, to be the shastra for revealing Lord Chaitanya's teachings and his pastimes. And so the books were found, and then Srinivasacharya stayed in that kingdom for many months and converted the king to a Vaishnava and all his associates. And the king, after becoming a Vaishnava, made his whole, because he was such a powerful, not a powerful king, but He was threatening kind of person. He threatened everyone. If you're not a Vaishnava, you're finished. So he forcibly made his whole kingdom Vaishnavas, and everyone took up the plan. So sometimes even today there is many Vaishnavas in that area. It's called Vishnuvanapur. It's a part of West Bengal. So he made that, and Prabhupada says that this is important, that we somehow or other attract and somewhat educate people who have big positions, because they can make a big difference. The entire area, well, actually, King Ashok, he was preached to by Buddhist saints, and he became a follower of Buddhism, and he made his whole kingdom Buddhism. So if we can preach to Theresa May, then maybe she'll make whole London. No, she doesn't have that kind of power. But anyway. Anyway, the more we can get the... Of course, we preach on all levels, but and it's always good to target people like that because they have a lot of influence. Okay. Shyamananda went to Utkala, and of course, he took shelter of his one particular personality. And this was actually before he met Srinivasacharya, and this pastime I just mentioned. And he was in the area of what is called, I don't remember the place, but it's the home of Goridas Pandit. Does anyone know where Goridas Pandit is? Huh? Ambika Kalna, thank you very much. Ambika Kalna. There's two, did you see those Gornitai deities there? Oh, there's two very large Gornitai deities there. Well, Goridas Pandit was a very strict follower of Lord Nityananda. And Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda personally came and stayed at the house of Goridas Pandit. This is a nice pastime. And they stayed for a whole month, and Goridas Pandit became so attracted to Gornitai that he served them so nicely. After a month, Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda said, "We are leaving." He said, "You can't leave. I'm not going to let you leave. If you leave me, you're going to leave. My life is going to leave me." In other words, his love was so strong and so attached. They said, "We're leaving." He said, "No, you can't leave." And Gornitai said, "We will stay here in the form of deities. And so we will make deities out of ourselves, and then you can worship those deities, and those deities are non-different than us." So Gornitai raised their hands and turned into deities. And then the real Gornitai started to leave. They manifested another set of themselves. And then Goridas Pandit sees Gornitai leaving, and he says, "Where are you going?" And he said, "We're non-different than the deities. If you're non-different than the deities, you stay and let the deities go." So the deities became Gornitai, and Gornitai became the deities, and they switched positions, and the deities started to go. But now it was Gornitai moving away as the deities, and he said, "No, you can't go because the deities are non-different than you, and the deities, you could, so the deities should go and you should stay." And so this went back and forth, and finally he couldn't tell which one was the real set. And those deities are still there. We went, we did pilgrimage, and we and the family who can controls that particular ashram there, and they give you darshan of the deities, but they open the door for 10 seconds. Because they're afraid the deities are going to leave if they see any pure devotees. So when we were there, we were instructed, when they open the deity curtain, don't pay obeisances, because if you do, you'll miss the darshan. So you can pay obeisances like standing, watching like this. So it's beautiful, beautiful, beautiful deities. So one day, after the deities were there in Goridas Pandit's house, Riddhi Chaitanya was performing kirtan on the banks of the Ganga, and Gornithai, not Chaitanya Das, not Riddhi Chaitanya, Chaitanya Das, you correct me if I get it wrong, Chaitanya Das, and he was performing kirtan, and the kirtan was so ecstatic that these deities of Gornithai decided to join the kirtan. So they left their altar and went down to dance and chant to the kirtan of Chaitanya Das. And then Goridas Panda said, what happened? Gornithai's gone. Oh, he took a stick. He was angry. And he was going to chase them, trying to get them to come back. So he saw them down at the banks of the Ganga dancing and chanting to Chaitanya Das's kirtan. And when they saw Goridas Pandit coming after them with the stick, they jumped into the heart. Lord Chaitanya jumped into the heart of Chaitanya Das so he could hide from Goridas. And then he was given a new name, Riddhi Chaitanya. Chaitanya was in the heart. So Shyamananda, when he came there, he took shelter of Riddhi Chaitanya, and that became his spiritual master. And he worked under his guidance. After some time, Riddhi Chaitanya wanted to give further knowledge and instructions to his disciple. He knew that he wasn't able to do it, but he understood that Jiva Goswami was in Vrindavan. So he contacted Jiva Goswami by letter. It takes about a month before the letters go back and forth. Jiva Goswami said, yes, I will instruct him in the Shastras, you send him. So he went. And so on the order of his spiritual master, you take shelter of Jiva Goswami, you work under his care. So Jiva Goswami was instructing him, but he was also thinking he should also do some seva. So while he was in Vrindavan, he asked him, you go to Seva Kunj and you clean that place. Because every night Krishna comes and he dances Rasa Leela. And so, in the next morning, it's not so neat, because after the dancing, and things get changed. And so you go and you clean. So he would do that. And one day, after Krishna performed his pastimes, Radharani said to Lalita, Lalita, last night I lost my Nupura, my ankle bracelet. Can you go find it for me? She said, okay. Now, not wanting to be recognized, because it was after the evening, so it was during the early morning's hours, she changed her form into an old lady. Into an old lady. And then she's going, and she's looking, trying to find Radharani's ankle bracelet. And Goridas Pandit's there. Shyamananda's there. And he sees this lady looking. He says, Mataji, I don't know if he said that, but he addressed her in a respectful way. And he said, you lost something? You're looking for something? Not me, but my master. What did she lose? She lost her ankle bracelet, and he had found it when he was cleaning, so he just kept it. He didn't know whose it was. He was going to wait to return it to the owner. And he said, oh, and who is your master? Srimati Radharani. Oh, Radharani, and who are you? Lalita. No, you don't look like Lalita. I am. And if I show you my form, you won't be able to take it. Oh, my God. So, he said, you can try me. She said, you won't be able to bear my beauty. He said, you said you're Lalita. She said, okay. And she revealed her form as Lalita. He lost consciousness. Sometimes that happens in a material world too, but it's not the same. So her beauty was, I mean, if you actually could understand what real beauty is, we would understand it's not in this material world. The transcendental personalities, if Krishna is so beautiful that it's not that Krishna is beautiful, it's that beauty is Krishna. If you want to define beauty in its ultimate definition, you just have to say the word Krishna. That's Krishna. So he fainted. And then Radharani just came also. When he came back to consciousness, Radharani was there. And he presented her with the... He fainted again. Finally, he got some composure and he gave her her ankle bracelet back. She was so happy to receive the ankle bracelet. She wanted to reward him. So she took the bracelet and pushed it into his head and it made a type of tilak. She said, "Now I give you a name. Your name is Shyamananda." Because his name before that was Dukhi Krishnadas. And now she gave him the name Shyamananda, one who gives pleasure to Shyam. Radharani is Shyama. She's Shyama. So he had this new tilak and a new name. And so when he came back, Jiva Goswami said, "Well, where did you get that tilak?" And Radharani told him, "You know, don't say anything." So he didn't say anything. And Jiva Goswami didn't press it. So he just let it go. So after some time, he returns to... what's that place again? Ambika Kala, where Haridai Chaitanya is there. And now he's got a new name, Shyamananda, and he has this tilak. And so Haridai Chaitanya says, "What happened? Did Jiva Goswami reinitiate him? You can't do that. If someone is initiated, to reinitiate someone who is already initiated when that guru is in good standing is a major offense. Major offense." I can tell you a story. It's an ISKCON pastime. Would you like to hear it? I won't mention any names. I can't mention names because it's not right. But one very nice personality was taking shelter of one very nice sannyasi in our movement. And she was attracted to another sannyasi. She was already initiated and she wanted this other person. And her Guru Maharaj was very devastated by this whole thing. And he was brokenhearted. She came to me and asked me for my advice. And I said, "Don't do it." But she didn't listen. She wanted to take shelter of another person. Now, that other person gave her shelter, despite the fact that she was already initiated. And when I brought it up to her original spiritual master, he didn't want to talk about it. His heart was broken. Because disciples are like children. The relationship between the disciple and the guru is like father to daughter to like father to son. That's the actual. And it's a very affectionate relationship. It's not something that's just formalized. Because that person becomes so dear to you, he's taking you to Krishna, your real father. So he is actually Krishna in the form of father. It's a very, very wonderful relationship between the guru and the disciple. So that breaks the heart of the spiritual master when something like this happens. So he didn't want to talk about it with me. And I tried to persuade her, but she was fixed on this other person. Somehow or other, because this person made that mistake in giving her shelter, he fell down. Now she was without a spiritual master. And she came running to me and she said, "Maharaj, what do I do?" I said, "Well, your spiritual master is still there. You should go back." She was embarrassed. She was ashamed. She was repentant. She wanted again to come back. And I said, "He'll forgive you. Just take shelter and just make your apologies. She did, went back, he accepted her, and she became really fixed on that spiritual master and really grew in that relationship and became a wonderful devotee. So this is one of those happy ever after stories. The relationship actually got stronger because of this. But the principle was there that you can't reinitiate someone who is already initiated by someone who is in good standing. So when Hriday Chaitanya was assuming that Jiva Goswami has given initiation to my disciples and given him a new name, he was angry. And he came to Shyamananda, Dukhi Krishna Das, and he said, did Jiva Goswami initiate? No. He said, no. Where did you get this name? And he didn't want to say it came from Radharani, because Radharani told him, no, don't say anything. So he was quiet. So he, sometimes the father has to be a little strict with the disciple, the son, so he was beating him. But Shyamananda wouldn't reveal it. He wrote a letter to Jiva Goswami saying, expressing his feelings. Jiva Goswami said, I didn't reinitiate it. I don't know where he got that name from. Finally, after a few weeks, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared, and tell me if I'm wrong, in the dream of Hriday Chaitanya, and said, Radharani gave him that name. Radharani gave him that name because of the service he did for Srimati Radharani. So that's how he got his name, Shyamananda, one who gives pleasure to Shama. And then when Hriday Chaitanya realized that he had made a mistake and judged his disciple wrong, he apologized. Not only apologized, he fell at the feet of his disciple and begged forgiveness and said, actually, you are my spiritual master. Radharani has given you special blessings. So Shyamananda, he preached, and he made a wonderful disciple called Rasikananda. You've all heard of Rasikananda. He's also a wonder. He made the entire province of Utkala Krishna conscious, which is now Orissa. That's why Prabhupada said the Gaudiya Vaishnavas are in Bengal and Orissa, these two places. They're followers of Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And so, and then there's a wonderful story connected with Rasikananda. So that's a little bit about the pastimes of Shyamananda. And today is Hanuman Jayanti. Wow, if I start talking about Hanuman, should we say something? Yeah. He's the son of the wind god, Vayu. He's also appeared from the womb of Anjani. He's Anjani Putra. When he was a little boy, he was a monkey. And one day, he was a very powerful monkey. And so he saw the sun. And so he decided to catch the sun. He thought it was a big, gigantic fruit. So he started charging after the sun. And Indra saw what was happening. And Indra was worried that he's going to just mess up in the universe. So he took his thunderbolt and threw it at Hanuman, hit him in the chin. And that's the name Hanuman, means split chin. He broke his chin. And he knocked him down to earth when he hit him, and he was unconscious. I can't remember exactly how he came back to consciousness, but he came back to consciousness, and his mother took him for blessings from the sages. Now, the different sages gave him different. No, it wasn't the sages. It was the demigods. Yeah, it was the demigods gave him different blessings. Each of the demigods, one Surya gave him the blessings that he could never be burned by fire. Brihaspati gave him the blessings that he would know all the conclusions of all Vedic Shastras. And Vayu, his father, said that he would give him the blessings that he could jump for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of miles. So he had all these blessings, and he was only a little monkey. And so now he started doing more mischief. And then he was also harassing the sages. So the sages wanted to curse him, so they went to his mother and said, your son's a real mischievous little monkey, and we want to curse him. But we're going to curse him that he has all these powers, that we're going to curse him that he forgets the fact that he has all these powers. And only when somebody reminds him that he has these powers will he will be able to use them. So throughout his life, although he was so powerful, he didn't remember he had all these powers. So when he was on the shore of the southern tip of India, and he wanted to, the monkeys were thinking how to cross the ocean. Everyone was saying how they could jump. But Jambavan said to Hanuman, don't you know you can do it? And you can jump across this ocean for you. It's easy. Hanuman said, oh yeah, that's right. He remembered. And of course, that story when he jumped across. I told this yesterday in Soho Street during the Sunday Feast lecture. I don't know if I told it any. I told it really quickly, but I'll try to tell it today. So he was jumping, and while he was crossing the ocean, he's flying through the air. This mountain comes out of the ocean, the Mount Mainda. And the mountain is a personality. He says, oh, Hanumanji, I actually, you know, you're on a big mission, and you should take a little break. You should rest a little. I have, this mountain is full of nice fruits, trees, nice caves, you can relax. There's fresh water here. You know, go on a vacation. You know, take a trip to Wales. No, I'm just kidding. Anyway, in other words, take a vacation. Take a break. Hanuman said, thank you, but no thank you. He touched the mountain and went on. The pastime, or the message, is that when a devotee is fixed on the service of the Lord, he doesn't want to take anything for himself. He wants to serve the Lord in such a way that he continues. So he rejected the opportunity to take personal comfort because he was fixed on his mission. This is the message that Hanuman is teaching. That if my personal needs or comforts interferes with my service, the service becomes more important. This is the mood of a fixed Vaishnava. He's traveling, and all of a sudden, he can't move. Big Rakshashri comes out of the ocean. Her name is Simika. And she grabs his shadow, and he's stuck. She says, oh, monkey, you know, it's time for lunch, and I'm hungry, and you're my prasad. And she said, anyone who passes this way must enter into my mouth, because that's the benediction I have been given by Lord Brahma. And therefore, I am going to have you for lunch. So she opened her mouth to swallow Hanuman. Hanuman increased in size twice the size of her. She increased the size twice the size of him. She went to 30 yojanas, he went to 40, she went to 50, he went to 60, she went to 70, he went to 80, she went to 90. He shrunk down to a little monkey, walked in her mouth, came out and said, I have fulfilled the benediction of Brahma. Haribo Mataji. And she said, oh, you're very intelligent. I give you my blessings. You can go on your way. So he goes, and he's flying again. This time again, he gets stopped on this another Rakshasa, Sarasa. And she grabs him and says, "Oh, monkey, I'm going to eat you." So she opens her mouth and 20 yojanas, he goes to 30, she goes to the same scenario, 40, 50. She opens really wide, and then Hanuman shrinks down again, goes in her mouth, goes down her body, and gets to her heart and rips it apart. Honey, Bo. It's finished. One less Rakshashi. And she dies, falls into the ocean. Jai Shri Hanuman. Devotees like that, right? Right? When demons get killed, devotees are nonviolent, yes? We see a little ant on the floor, we think, oh, I shouldn't step on it. Sometimes Prabhupada was sitting in his room one time, and there was another devotee there, just him and another devotee, and Prabhupada's looking in the middle of the floor, and the devotee's wondering, what's Prabhupada looking at? And Prabhupada said, "You see that bug there?" And the devotee has, "Oh, yeah, yeah." Prabhupada said, "Take him out and put him on a flower." Take him outside, put him on the floor. So this is the nature of Vaishnava, very compassionate, even to the insects. Doesn't want to kill anything. Sometimes we kill something by accident and we feel bad about that. But when demons get killed, it's a celebration, right? Haribo. Yes, no? We're not sure today. It's Monday. Oh, yeah, that's the nature of Vaishnavas. They like when demons get killed. When demons get killed, what does the cowherd boy say? "Well done, well done, well done, Jai, Jai Kanai, well done, well done." Krishna says, yeah. Cowherd boys come up to Krishna and say, "Hey, Krishna, you know, you're like us. How do you kill all these demons?" Krishna says, "You really want to know?" And before even he answers, they said, one boy says, "I know. He has this mantra special for killing demons. He's not telling us." Another boy says, no, that's not it. "It's his mother. His mother gives him the power. She puts these amulets on. She chants mantras. And he has all this Shakti from his mother. That's why he can kill these demons." So they're going back and forth, trying to guess. Krishna says, "Should I tell you?" "Ooh, yeah." He says, "I'm God." "No." "When I was born, there was a great sage named Garga Rishi. He came to see my father and read my horoscope. And he said, this boy appears in different colors in different millenniums. And he's actually Narayan himself. So if you really want to know, I'm Narayan." And they don't want to hear that. They said, "Yeah, but we beat you in wrestling." And then after Krishna reveals, they said, "All right, let's go play." So they're not interested in the fact that he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They're more happy to, and they're more natural, their relationship is Krishna's their friend. He's the best of all friends. And so he plays with them and they play with him. They steal his lunch pail and he gets angry. They look into his lunch pail and say, "Wow, look what Mother Yasoda has given you. Can we have some of that? Our mother's not doesn't prepare stuff like this." So they treat Krishna as one of their friends, and that's Sakya Ras. That's that mellow, loving relationship between the Lord and his devotee, which is in the mood of friendship, and Krishna likes that. That's Krishna in Vrindavan. Like that. So when Krishna revealed himself as Narayan, it's just like, let's talk about something else, or let's do something else. So that's Krishna. So yeah, so devotees like when demons get killed. So Hanuman, and many other wonderful pastimes of Hanuman, but it's getting on. So is there any questions or comments?